This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
What a glorious chance to tie the game, and they run out of time. The Winnipeg Jets hang on for a thrilling 4-3 victory tonight in Dallas, Texas. And the Monkey is off their back. They've won three in a row for the first time this season.
The celebration started Thursday night in Dallas. It's still ongoing. The people are out in the streets. When will the celebration die down? The Jets, winners of three in a row for the first time this season, taking care of business Thursday night in Dallas. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the 8th anniversary show of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, I was just going to say the celebration isn't going to stop because we're celebrating 8 years today.
There we are. Well, the celebration might stop at around 4:30, 4:45 this afternoon, depending on what happens with the Jets in their game in Denver this afternoon.
Well, that's when you take your grandpa nap anyways.
I wish I could take a grandpa nap. Naps are much more hard to come by now when you have a toddler and whatnot. But, coming from you, the guy whose naps are a minimum of 3 hours, it doesn't really mean that much. In any event, I say good morning to the man on my left, Ezra Ginsberg, the man on my far left, Dave Manuk, sporting, I must say, a very apropos t-shirt today, the Whale.
Oh,
with
yeah,
the announcement and with the news that the governor of Connecticut has sent a letter to the Islanders' owners welcoming them to play in Hartford. That's something we'll talk about later on in the program, but anytime you can see the mighty Whale, whether it be on a t-shirt or a jersey, I give you a salute for that, Dave Manuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. We start, of course, gentlemen, Thursday night in Dallas. The Jets, by the skin of their chinny chin chin, hang on to defeat the Stars by that 4-3 margin. Mark Scheifele leading the way. He had two goals, was the best Jets forward on the ice. He was absolutely dominant every time. Very noticeable. He had six shots on goal.
He almost had three goals.
Almost had three goals. Yep. Number of grade A opportunities. The Jets, are able to have that 4-3 lead after 40 minutes, and they hold on desperately for dear life and end up winning by that 4-3 margin. A big victory for the Jets. It propels them over a number of teams in the NHL's Western Conference wildcard standings. They're now ahead by virtue of that victory on Thursday night. They jump ahead of the Dallas Stars. They jump ahead of the Vancouver Canucks, albeit those teams have some games in hand. But a very important third victory in a row for the Winnipeg Jets on Thursday night.
Yeah, guys, and it wasn't easy for the Jets to leave Dallas with that 4-3 win. I mean, the Jets were outshot 14-3 in that third period, but at that point, Andre Pavlik made some big saves, and four goals was enough for the Jets to win. But I mean, you got to give this team credit again on the road, scoring four plus goals, and Andre Pavlik gets his second straight start after the All-Star break. Connor Hellebuck picked up that big win against the Chicago Blackhawks to get the win streak going, Drew. But this team right now still isn't playing, in my opinion, the way you want in your defensive zone, giving up too many chances. I mean, the Jets gave up 42 shots, and the Dallas Stars are a top offensive team. I realize maybe they aren't where they were last year, and some of that has to do with all of the injuries they suffered, Dave. But I mean, Andre Pavlik, to me, was the star of this game, the first star of this game. Mark Scheifele, Nikolai Ehlers, Patrick Laine, Blake Wheeler, the top offensive players for the Jets got the job done. But really, Andre Pavlik, I mean, what else can you say? Paul Maurice was gushing about him after the game, and I think he deserves a lot of credit. He let in three goals, and his goals against average is still above three in six games in the NHL this year. But I mean, the Dallas Stars had some high quality scoring chances. Jamie Benn hit the crossbar in the third period, but I mean, so it wasn't a beautiful game, But the Jets have finally won three games in a row now. Mm-hmm. They continue to be dominant against the Central Division. What are they, 13-4-1? So this is exactly what we were talking about on last week's show. The Jets have to get a winning streak going, and it's three games now. It should be four when you consider the Avalanche have won one game since Christmas.
Yeah,
so
this is amazing.
I mean, the Jets are still sticking around in this playoff conversation.
Yeah, I mean, again, the Jets' dominance against the Central Division is unbelievable. They go to be nine straight against within your division, and obviously the Central isn't as good as it was. But the reality is you have to win these games. And while you're not necessarily challenging for a spot in the top three of the Central right now, mm-hmm. because Minnesota, Chicago are untouchable, I think Nashville probably will just keep on going. I don't think that the Jets can catch them. I mean, obviously they can, but I think that
it'll think it's likely.
I don't think it's likely. Mm-hmm. So, you know, regardless of whether you can catch the teams in the Central, you still need to get these points. They're critical. And they can obviously hold you in good stead later on if you happen to be playing any of these teams. But, I mean, again, you know, you don't plan a Stanley Cup parade for winning three games in a row, obviously. No. It's definitely a nice achievement. It's something that the players, I'm sure, are ecstatic to not have to answer that same generic question over and over again for the 10th time now. I think that was the 10th time they were going for the third win in a row. So now they no longer have to answer that one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've put themselves into a good spot in the sense that, look, Colorado – I mean, it seems like almost like deja vu because we're talking about like this, you know, a game that's absolutely a critical win. It should be a relatively easy win. But you just have this feeling that today's game is going to be much more difficult than it probably should be.
Well, because history indicates, you know, there was the game when they went into Arizona on that Friday night a few weeks back, right, sort of before the last sort of on the West Coast trip where you're going to play the Arizona Coyotes, a team that is at the bottom of the Western Conference, just ahead of the Colorado Avalanche, and they laid an egg. And so that's the sort of the conundrum as a Winnipeg Jets fan, and has been the conundrum for the last 6 years. The games you don't expect them to win, games against Chicago, previous games against St. Louis, whatever, they end up playing well and end up, you know, being victorious. And then you have a game this afternoon against the Colorado Avalanche, and, you know, no disrespect intended, but they are, I mean, they have 13 wins on the season. And like you said, Ezzie, they have one win since Christmas. They have 28 points in 48 games. This isn't just a bad team. This is a horrendous team.
No, it's the worst team in the NHL, Drew. And, mm-hmm. and you have to win this game this afternoon. I mean, the Avalanche, guys, if you remember back in November, beat the Jets in overtime with that own goal. I think it was Nikolai Ehlers.
That's right.
That put it in his own net. But I think this is not only important because you just need wins, doesn't matter who you're playing, but because you have those four home games coming up, Drew, and there are days off in between the games against Minnesota and Chicago, but then you've also got Tampa on the second game of a back-to-back. You've got Dallas again. So, I mean, you know that Minnesota's a really good team. You know that Chicago doesn't want to lose to the Jets five times this year.
That's the end of the season series.
Yes.
Next Friday, that's it. So if the Blackhawks don't win that one, then they've been completely swept by the Jets all year long.
Right, so you know they're going to come into Winnipeg wanting to get that victory. And then Tampa Bay, I mean, who knows what Tampa Bay is going to do. It doesn't look like they're going to make the playoffs unless they go on an incredible run. But you have Dallas coming up the week after. And you know that Dallas is going to be hungry because they're fighting with the Jets. But to me, the hardest part of that schedule is the four road games after that where you've got Pittsburgh, Montreal, Ottawa, and Toronto.
Yeah.
All four of those teams right now are either in a playoff spot or close to a playoff spot.
And that's right before the Jets go on their bye week. And really, that's the bye week is where you're going to see all these teams that have the games in hand catch up to the Jets. So, you know, going from now really through the end of the month, that's when, you know, by the end of February, you'll see that these teams are more on equal footing in terms of games played. With the exception of the Calgary Flames, who have played the same number of games as the Jets, everybody else has two or three games in hand. So that's why, and that's going to, I mean, the Jets can't control that. That's the way the schedule was drawn out. It's not a very difficult schedule for the Jets going forward in terms of actual games in days played. They have a lot of time off. But the Jets need to just focus on what they can control, which is the next, really, seven games, you know, eight games or so, nine games, and then they'll hit the bye week. And when they come out of the bye week, then, you know, they will know that if is it a five-week sprint to the finish, or have all these teams use their games in hand advantageously, and the Jets are back again behind the eight ball.
Again, the advantage to Winnipeg is the fact that you have three of your next four against the Central,
right,
and you've shown that dominance against the Central, and if you can continue that, I mean, that I look, at the end of the day, you can just keep adding points. You can't worry about what everybody else is doing. You can't worry about what you've done in the past. You can't think about it. You have to have a very short memory, wins or losses. Mm-hmm. And I think to their credit, I think the team's tried to do that. I think they've tried not to, you know, especially Blake Wheeler, you know, he's tried to counsel when they have a big win, that let's not get overly excited, you know, and similar to a loss. And but the fact is, this is as big a must win as you're going to have on the schedule, just because Colorado has 94. I mean, we talk about, you know, some of this potent scoring on this team. They have 94 goals for.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
less than 2 goals a game.
And no other team is even close to them. Like, I mean, it's no other team is below 100.
Yeah.
And so the Colorado Avalanche, I mean, if you can put up 3-4 goals, which the Jets have been showing that they have no problems doing, especially against, you know, they're not going up against the top goaltending for, I think it's Calvin Picard in net today.
It's
going
to be Picard against Andre Pavlik is right. The goaltending matchup tonight.
Yeah, so you're not exactly dealing with
Sergei Bobrovsky in his prime.
That's right. So again, you have an opportunity to bury a team. You have to take advantage of it. I mean, it's funny because Matthew Perreault oftentimes will say, this game's a must-win, this game's a must-win. In my mind, this is a must-win because this is a game, just from a mental standpoint, you just can't afford to, like, obviously they've won 3 in a row and they could be like, well, we've lost one. It's not the end of the world. You know, we've got many more games ahead. But this is an absolute must-win.
If you don't win this game this afternoon, then the winning 3 in the row previously is almost – it almost renders it meaningless.
Well, the game in Dallas was must-win. I mean, the game in Chicago was must-win. When you're a team that is 5 points out of the playoffs, they're all must-win at this point, right? Guys, I would look at these next 9 games before the break, the bye week, and I would say that if you really want to put yourself in a position to make the playoffs and make that final push for the playoffs, I'd say you'd have to win 6 of these 9 or at the very least get points in 6 of the 9. So if you go something like 5-3-1 or, you know, if you're able to go 6-2-1, something like that.
Well, you got the 4 games at home starting Tuesday night against the Minnesota Wild. I mean, yeah, you're right, Ezzy, but I mean, we've been saying this really since, for months now, that the Jets really need to win 2/3 of their remaining games in the schedule. Nothing has changed about that. They've started to do that by winning these 3 in a row. So that's what's changed is that, you know, they're actually stringing together a number of wins.
Yeah, Drew, but you know what you really have to look at here? It's the games in hand that are going to hurt the Jets because, for example, the St. Louis Blues, after losing to the Jets, won last night big over the Toronto Maple Leafs. So now they're
Thursday
a point
night,
back.
Yeah.
But they have... Yes, pardon me, it was Thursday night,
yeah,
you're right, Drew.
The Blues are a point up on the Jets.
But with 3 games in hand.
3 games in hand. Yeah. And absolutely, that is going to be... You know, that's going to be quite likely be the Jets' bugaboo when it comes to fruition. And it's likely going to come to fruition when the Jets are on that bye week. You know, they have the 7 days off or whatever, however many days off it is. And all these teams will play, you know, 2 or 3 games in those
5 days off.
5 days off. And the Jets will play, you know, all these teams will play 2 or 3 games in those 5 days. And everybody will be on equal footing at that point in time. And there'll be, you know, 20 games to go in the season or whatever the exact number is. I'm spitballing here. And the Jets will know, are they, you know, tied with these teams with the same number of games played? Are they 4 points behind these teams with the same number of games played? Maybe these teams take no advantage whatsoever and the Jets continue to go on a heater. Are the Jets ahead of these teams at the same number of games played?
Yeah, but to your point earlier, Drew, you mentioned that if the Jets aren't able to pick up 2 points against Colorado this afternoon, it kind of erases those 3 wins.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, if the Jets beat Colorado tomorrow and then they only win 2 of 4 of their next games at home, then it kind of erases those 4 wins on the road because you can't play, you know, 500 hockey for the rest of the season. We talked about it. You're going to have to win, might even be more like 65% of your games when you consider St. Louis is going to make a push, Dallas is going to make a push, Jonathan Quick is going to come back, and LA is going to make a push. So it's not going to be easy for the Jets, but certainly this afternoon, I mean, Colorado, like, yeah. I don't think anybody expected it to be this bad. This is a horrible hockey team, but they have already beaten the Jets once this year, so they can't take them lightly.
You're absolutely right. They can't take them lightly. I'll put a bit of an asterisk next to it when they beat them in November. I mean, they still had hope to their season in November. Right now, they're a team that is...
Technically, the Jets beat the Jets in November anyway.
Yeah, I guess. So. Exactly. At least it was in overtime, though. So, yeah. I mean, this is a team that, I don't know, Frank Saravelli had a good article on TSN.ca, and we'll talk much more about the Avs, and we'll talk to Drew Spivak, who covers the Avs in the last hour. You know, this is a team that the players don't know where they're going to be playing next year, a large amount of them. They're all really looking out for number one right now. If the St. Louis Blues had a team of independent contractors, you know, back when you know, when Doug Armstrong made his comments after firing Ken Hitchcock, the Colorado Avalanche have a team of hourly employees. They're not even independent contractors. That's how bad things are in Colorado. But it's imperative that the Jets take advantage of that when they meet at 2 o'clock this afternoon at the Pepsi Center in Denver, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN 1290, also available on TSN 3. As we mentioned off the top of the program, it's our eight-year anniversary.
Ocho.
Illegal Curve Ocho, of being on radio. From the Illegal Curve archives, here is how the debut of the first ever program of the IllegalCurve.com radio show sounded. We head to break on this.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba, and to all those listening in on www.kick.fm, good evening, universe, and welcome to the inaugural LegalCurve.com radio show. I'm your host, Drew. I'm joined in studio tonight by my usual band of co-conspirators. To the left of me, I have Richard Pollock. Richard, say good evening to the nice people.
Good evening, everybody.
To the right of me, Ezra Ginsberg. Ezzy, say good evening to the nice people.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Red River audience. Let's go. This is awesome.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Into the corner. Out in front for Shipley. A shot. He scores! Mark Shipley wasted no time on that one. Kept in there by Winnipeg. Stick up in the air, almost discarded. Empty net, shot out in front of shot, they score! Nikolai Ehlers, as Kari Lehtinen came out of his net to play the puck, got caught there, turned over the puck, and Ehlers had an empty net.
The Jets' young guns doing the job on Thursday night in Dallas. Shifley with two, Ehlers with one, Brian Little, the grizzled veteran of the group, also with a goal. Jets win 4-3 over the Dallas Stars.
By the way, Drew, what was Kari Lehtinen doing on that goal?
You could say, what is Kari Lehtinen doing on most of those goals? I mean,
he was letting one in.
Yeah. I mean, I tweeted it on Thursday that the Stars pulled the goal when the Stars pulled the goalie. I said, well, you can make the argument the Stars have played without a goaltender all season long. And for a Winnipeg Jets, you know, commentator and or fan to be making fun of another team's goaltending really tells you how bad the Stars' goaltending has been.
By the way, Drew, there was no reason to repeat that tweet. I saw it at the time. It was mildly funny.
You know what? I hate you. I should mention that this segment of the show is brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. The question I have for you, gentlemen, based on we heard the clip of Shifley scoring and the clip of Ehlers scoring, do the Jets have the best group of 23 and under skaters in the NHL? Leaving goaltenders aside, do the Jets have the best group of 23 and under skaters in the entire NHL?
No, Drew, it's a very interesting question because when you look at the Winnipeg Jets and where they're at right now, not only in the standings, but kind of where they are in, you know, the development as a team, I mean, really, it's the youth that I think is the most promising, right? And everybody knows that Patrick Laine and Nikolai Ehlers are leading the way, but you can throw in Josh Morrissey in there, right? You can throw in Andrew Kopp in there. You can throw in Nick Pettan in there. I don't know, Drew, if the Jets have the most promising group of 23 and under players, but if they don't have the most promising, they've got to be top three because you got to throw in Toronto in there, mm-hmm. right? Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, Nylander, yeah. Morgan Riley is still under 23, Zach Hyman, Brendan Leipzig. I mean, you can go on and on and on. Edmonton Oilers, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl. I think you'd have to throw
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is still 23 and under, believe
sure.
it or not.
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
He seems like he's been in the league for a decade, but he's yep. still 23 and under.
Oscar Klefbom, I think he's still under 23, so Larson's 24 now. But I think most of the teams that have the most promising young talent are Canadian. Throw in the Calgary Flames in there. Matthew Tkachuk, Sam Bennett, Dougie Hamilton still under 23. Mm-hmm. So
Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan.
Yeah, I think Johnny Gaudreau just turned 23.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think that there is a question, guys, that the future looks extremely bright for the Jets. And, you know, we just talked about it. Look at, you know, the guys who contributed in Dallas and before that in St. Louis. Josh Morrissey got that big assist on the goal against St. Louis when he followed up the play and got in up in the St. Louis Blues defenseman and created a turnover there. So, I mean, Line A, Ehlers, Morrissey, Kopp, Patan. I mean, we know that this Jets team is young.
He's 22.
Sorry, Jacob Trouba. You think he's, you know, 25, but he's only played 4 years in the league. So, I mean, it's pretty impressive what the kids are doing for the Jets. And, I mean, you could make the argument that maybe the Jets could use a few, you know, veterans, especially maybe in goal and on defense to kind of shore up the rest of the team depth-wise, right? But I think if the Jets aren't number one, Drew, you got to at least put them in the top three or five.
Well, I crunched the numbers. I put together a spreadsheet of all the players who are 23 and under and have more than 20 points this season. I just did. I picked a random number at 23. Yep. And the Jets have the most. The Jets have four players who are 23 and under who have more than 20 points: Scheifele, Ehlers, Laine, and Trouba.
Yep.
The Flames have the most guys. They have five players who are 23 and under with more than 20 points: Monahan, Goudreau, Hamilton, Tkachuk, and Bennett. But the Jets' four players have more total points combined than the Flames' five players do that are under 23. So in terms of, I mean, maybe the most, the Flames have the most. But in terms of productivity, the Jets get a higher percentage or a higher total of points from the players on their roster that are 23 and under than the Flames do, than the Oilers do, than the Leafs do.
And if you're, you know, and again, we're talking about all Canadian teams here, right, guys?
Yeah.
But, and these are also teams that have struggled and missed the playoffs quite a bit over the last 4 or 5 years, right? The Flames, the Leafs. The Edmonton Oilers haven't made the playoffs since 2006, so that's why this year is so big for that franchise, right? So certainly the amount of good young talent that is on this Jets roster, and it's not just on the roster. These are guys that are contributing. And you have Jack Roslovic and Kyle Connor, who are down in the AHL, and we expect them to be in the NHL either next year or the year after. So, I mean, there's certainly no shortage of good young players for this Jets team, and there are no shortage of good young players in other markets in Western Canada, and then you can throw in Toronto there as well. So, I mean, for me, the big storyline of this year has been the play of the young players. I mean, I realize that the storyline has also been, guys, the struggles in goal and the fact that Andrei Pavlik had to be called up because Connor Hellebuyck and Michael Hutchinson were struggling. But what Patrick Laine and Nick Ehlers, Josh Morrissey, Andrew Kopp, I mean, he's been playing very well on that Scheifele-Wheeler line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been very impressive. You don't have too many young players on this team right now that are struggling. Kyle Connor was one of them, Drew, but he was sent down.
Right.
But with the exception of Kyle Connor, I would say that most of the young players in the Jets lineup, they are where the Jets thought they would be development-wise.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question that the Jets' young players aren't playing like they are young players. I mean, we talk about that dreaded sophomore slump, and Nikolai Ehlers has shown that that's not necessarily always the case with his exemplary play this year. You know, you look at a lot of the teams, and you guys just did, and the truth is Toronto has a lot of very nice young pieces. It's kind of funny how William Nylander started off so hot for Toronto, had, you know, Rookie of the Month in, I believe, October, and he's kind of not mentioned again, but he's still right up there in terms of the rookie scoring and
he's
Toronto
in that. I believe that the Leafs are trading William Nylander to the Jets in exchange for both Laine, Ehlers, and Trouba.
Yeah.
I think that's the latest poll that's coming out of Toronto right now.
No, I actually think we threw you in as well, Drew.
Oh, me too. Okay. So would you trade Nylander for Laine, Ehlers, Trouba, myself, and what? I think the entire organization, ownership of the team as well.
Exactly. So, but he's a very nice player. And the fact is Toronto, I think, has the most production out of their rookies, and if not, it's by a country mile. Like, I think it's
sure rookies as opposed to second.
Yeah. But I'm just talking about just their rookies alone. Yeah. I think they have like it's 180 points, whatever the number was. It wasn't
probably 112 would be my guess for Marner, Matthews, and Nylander. Would they total 112? But there were some other rookies there too.
There are some. Yeah. Anyways, all I'm saying is it's not even close. Like they're well ahead of everyone else. So and as he just went through it, Calgary's got a very nice young crop. Edmonton does as well, and it's a function of not being in the playoffs and a function of having the opportunity to draft very high for a number of years. So it should come as no surprise that a number of the Canadian teams that haven't been in the playoffs are now getting that kind of crop of young players. And as touched on, you know, the Jets forward group especially the pipeline is bright in terms of, like, you know, when we watched Jack Roslovic play last night, and his ceiling is really high. I mean, he's just a very, very good player. Needs some time. I mean, he's not a player you're talking about for this year. And same with Kyle Connor. They need time in the AHL. It's a, you know, it's a reality of, you know, there's, when you draft and develop, if you want to be a draft and develop team,
not everybody's Patrick Laine.
No, but and not only that, but the whole point is, like, everyone always, like, kind of tar and feathered Atlanta for rushing their guys. Bogosian got rushed. Evander Kane got rushed. Alexander Bermistrov got rushed. Mm-hmm. The reality is, if you don't rush these, you know, like, people talk about these young prospects. Mm-hmm. Oh, bring up these guys. No, don't. You leave these guys alone. You leave them in the AHL, and they'll develop into proper players.
Yeah, they'll marinate nicely.
And the truth is, they'll get rid of their bad habits. Because that is the developmental league. That's not – the NHL is in the developmental league. The AHL is.
Sure.
So that's where your game is going to develop, and you're going to learn all the aspects of the game. And as he was talking about – and he saw it because, you know, he saw how close he was, how much better was Roslovic's game defensively on – whereas he might not have been that way if he just goes right from playing college hockey to the NHL.
Yeah, Jack Roslovic's going to be in the NHL very soon. Another team.
Not this year, though.
No.
Well,
no.
I don't think so. It won't be this year, but I would expect him to get at the very least some games next year, because he's been. I mean, Dave can talk about it more than I can. I mean, he's been a top player for the Moose all year. One other team I wanted to quickly throw in, Drew.
Yeah.
And you know, this team doesn't have the high end talent I think that the Jets have, but the Carolina Hurricanes.
That's where I was going to go.
Victor Rask,
yeah.
Sebastian Aho, Teuvo Teravainen, Elias Lindholm, Noah Hanifin.
Yeah, on the back end, they have a ton of talent.
Yeah, and then you've got a guy like Jake Bean, who's going to be in the NHL pretty soon. So the Hurricanes are another team that has a lot of 23 and under talent.
Absolutely. We go to break and come back on the other side with Tim Campbell of NHL.com. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're celebrating 8 years on air on TSN. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuke with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Tim Campbell. Tim covers the NHL for NHL.com. Tim, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
No trouble. How are you guys today?
Doing very well, Tim. How about yourself?
Excellent.
That's good. You know, Tim, last segment we were just talking about sort of the best 23 and under teams in the NHL. You know, the teams that have the most talent in the younger cohort, let's say. And you spent a lot of this year watching a team in Edmonton that certainly has tremendous under-23 talent with McDavid and with Leon Draisaitl. And, you know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, believe it or not, is still 23 and under, even though he seems like he's been in the league for a decade now. From your perspective, is there one team more than another that sort of jumps out as having the best 23 and under talent in the league?
Wow, what a good question. You know, I think Edmonton is probably in your top three conversation. I'm a big fan of, you know, what the Jets are doing, what they have, some of the glamorous players they have who are younger. I think, you know, despite the standings today, there are a lot of teams around the NHL that look at Winnipeg and are somewhat envious of the growth factor that's, you know, that's really possible here in the future. I don't see how you can have this conversation either without, you know, talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think that usually evokes a love or hate reaction from a lot of people, you know, based on history and who you've always cheered for. But the Leafs have decided and finally followed through on a plan. They have some really good young players in Toronto. They've been able to make a little bit of noise in the Eastern Conference. They haven't had the best of weeks, but, you know, small pictures are dangerous pictures. I think they're certainly going in the right direction in Toronto. And if there was any question as to whether Austin Matthews was a real deal or not, or whether he's going to be a good player for a long time in the NHL, I mean, in my mind, that question has been answered here in a half a season. I think that's plenty enough time to say he's going to be a really, really good player in this league for a long time. You know, and the other team that comes to mind to me is Columbus. If you go to the roster lists and ferret out the average ages of the younger teams in the league. Columbus is also one of the younger teams around the NHL. Got some really good young talent there. People like Seth Jones and Cam Atkinson and Alexander Wenberg. I think he would still qualify in that under 23 category, if I'm not mistaken. They've been able to dodge some of the problems of the past, injuries in particular, and I like what they're doing. The other team that comes to mind, you brought the subject up, is Arizona. I continue to be a bit troubled by why it might be taking so long there, but they've also had some injury issues, and they're maybe a little deficient in terms of that middle range of talent and older talent, or having a lot of it that can help young players along. But I really like some of the young players they're starting to assemble in Arizona. I know the results are not there, and that would be a vigorous debate, I guess, if you really wanted to drill into whether they're going in the right direction or not. So those are the ones that come to the top of my mind.
Tim, going back to the Winnipeg Jets here, how surprised are you that Andre Pavlik has been able to come back from the Manitoba Moose, play six games, pick up four wins, and really get the Jets back into the playoff race?
I'm not surprised at all. Given the circumstances and what the team probably needed, I think it's easy to say right now it's been the right move. This whole episode with the team's goaltending in the mid part of the season here, and then them sort of being painted into a corner to have to recall Andre, has made me give a rethink to some of the things I've watched and how I've judged or gauged them over time. I mean, there's been so much emphasis, I think, for the Jets on save percentage and even goals against average. And not that those are bad statistics, but I think sometimes they're terrible statistics if you just want to take a two-week period. I'm starting to think that save percentage is one of the most dangerous stats in a small picture that you can have, because it doesn't really tell you things that Andre Pavlik has been able to do in the last week. You guys will correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think his statistics have been all that outstanding here since he's rejoined the team. With the exception of one thing that you mentioned, Ezra, which is the wins. If you've watched the games lately to see how he's playing and, things that are happening within a game, I think he's allowed at least three goals in every time he's played. Is that right?
Yeah,
right.
Tim, his goals against average is 3.21.
So that illustrates what I want to say, is that already we've seen him probably be the factor or a number one or a number two factor in at least, I would say, two games he's played already, which in my brain is, you can give him credit for helping the Jets steal the game, where maybe the other team had better chances or outplayed the Jets. But Andre Pavlik, despite giving up three goals probably on a night, has made the difference. And I'm not sure you could say that very much about what was happening in the first half of the season. It's not a criticism or a put down of what the Jets are trying to do, but what they were trying to do was way out there on the edges of what works in the NHL. It's not to say they shouldn't have done it either, because you have a prospect of the kind that Connor Hellebuyck was and still is. I think you're dreaming in more technicolors than I can imagine to think that at 23 years old he is going to be the guy to solve your problems. Go through all of the history of all of the teams, of all of the goalies over the last, say, 20 years, and you're not going to find many 23-year-old goalies who have consistently made a difference. And again, don't give me short snapshots. It's a work, it's a growth in progress. So they brought in a veteran guy who knows what's going on. I think it took him a game or two just to get his eyes and his brain into the sort of NHL mode again. Even though he has all that experience, I thought it was highly unrealistic to think he would be great in the first game or two. He did enough to get them some wins, and now I think you're starting to see While still some funny goals go in for me, he's been able to make a difference at some really important times and help the Jets stay with the pack here in the Western Conference. I think that's the best sign of all, and it's the sign that tells you what they've done is working. And am I surprised? I'm not really surprised.
Tim, heading back to L.A. for the All-Star game, which you got to attend, what was your impression of Patrick Laine's handling of the media there? Was he overwhelmed by it? Like, you know, here he's usually the big fish. There he was there amongst a lot of other big fish. So what was the experience like, do you think, for Patrick Laine?
Yeah, there were a lot of big fish in L.A. last weekend, maybe more than ever. I my observation of Patrick, and I did watch him a little bit, on, especially in the media day, he's just like he always is here in Winnipeg and wherever they go. He's a pretty calm, sort of ice in his veins young guy. I can't say I've ever seen him get worked up in any way, good or bad, in an interview scenario in the dressing room or wherever it may be. He's a thoughtful young guy. It probably has something to do with the language issue, where he's still getting a better grasp of English, so it tends to maybe make him a little more thoughtful, but he answers questions directly. I think a lot of reporters in a lot of places really like that and appreciate that. And if you've got the patience to sort of let him think out his answers, he's got some smart things to say. I thought he handled himself really well, and just as well as he has in the first 6 months here of his NHL career. I think maybe right now it's interesting to watch others who interact with him, who talk to him, who are interested in him. It's interesting to me now to watch some of those people and to talk to some of those people, whereas I think there was this perception of Patrick just prior to the draft last June and around the draft and right after the draft that he was maybe a little bit too cocky for his own good, maybe bordering on the arrogant. I know in Toronto, where the focus, of course, was on Austin Matthews a lot around the draft, a lot of people thought Patrick Laine maybe had too big of a head and too big of an opinion of himself. But now you see what's happened in a little over half a season, and I don't think Patrick Laine has actually changed one bit. And I don't think his answers have changed very much either. But you listen and talk to some of those people now, and you're starting to see a better appreciation for the kinds of things he does. And for my money, I find the most interesting element of the whole Patrick Laine discussion is the fact that he's only 18 years old. Austin Matthews is more or less a full hockey year ahead of Patrick Laine in development, and yet we're seeing what we see in the NHL. I've tried here in the last little while since he's come back from his injury to envision the kinds of things we'll see from Patrick Laine in 4 or 5 years. What kind of anchor or rock will he be here in Winnipeg? I'm assuming he's going to be here for a long time. And I think that is one of the most uplifting, encouraging thoughts you could have if you're a big fan of the Jets. Is don't think about what Patrick Laine is able to do now, but I mean, this kid has shown an ability to improve and to be a sponge, and now he's just learning to play the NHL kind of game. I think it's a really, really bright picture for a number of years down the road here, the things he'll be able to do and the importance he'll be able to have for the Winnipeg Jets.
I think Jets fans would agree with you. Tim Campbell of NHL.com joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Tim, you mentioned the star power that was on display in Los Angeles last weekend. One name that you're very familiar with from your time here in Winnipeg covering the Winnipeg Jets 1.0, Dale Hawerchuk. He wasn't among the NHL's top 100 players of all time. How surprised were you when Dale Hawerchuk was omitted from that list?
Yeah, you know what? You bring up a good point. Initially, I was quite surprised for a number of factors. You look at the NHL's all-time scoring list, and I think he's number 18, if I have that right.
Yeah.
Right in that zone. So, okay, I mean, it's not a list of top scorers in the NHL of all time, but that's got some value. Dale's highs, his best seasons, or rank among the best ever for any player offensively. I suppose take Gretzky out of the equation, but Howardchuk would be in the conversation with every player not named Gretzky, I think, that's really ever played. So I was a little disappointed, I suppose, on a personal level, having experienced some of Dale's career and knowing him a little bit over time. I don't think he himself would have lost any sleep over it. I would imagine there'd be a small bit of disappointment given the circles he used to run in and the conversations he'd be held in many, many years, many, many seasons. There are a couple of other players that came to mind for me right out of that. Paul Kariya was one of the top omissions as well for me. And then the debate has been raging on for a while about Malkin and Joe Thornton. I think the active players question was really tough for the panel that voted. But back to the Howardchuk thing one more. I don't know if fans here are outraged or disappointed or whatever. But having talked to a couple of voters last weekend, I found it really interesting to get some insight as to how some of the omissions might have happened. And I don't think there's snubs or omissions as much as there are just that many good players over the course of NHL history. And I think largely what happened, if I had to extrapolate how this went, was, you know, it seemed to me anyway, the few people that I talked to who voted, they had a pretty easy time, let's say, with their top 65 or 75 names, maybe 80 names, pretty slam dunkish kind of thing. So the process then would have 20 more spots on your ballot, let's say, and you've clearly got 50 names that all are worthy to be considered in this list, to be with this group of great legends. So how do you start ferreting out the bottom 20 when you've got 50 names? Well, you go to the stats, you start comparing. And one of the things that will be a big comparison when you get into that exercise, we're not talking about the top 100 now, but how to figure out who the last 20 on your ballot are, one of the things is Stanley Cups. This, again, here's an argument probably you guys could have three shows about in a row. Yeah. Nothing else but that,
yeah.
And you could fill them easily about the debate of what's a Stanley Cup worth on a resume. So in the end, and with Dale not having a cup on his resume, I'm not saying that that's the reason he's not on the list, but when you come to comparing players who you know, a voter would have been trying to fill that bottom 20 spots on his ballot, you know, that would be one of the things that matters. And if you go to the list, I saw some statistic there when the list was finally announced last week, and I think the total number of Stanley Cups in the top 100 players of all time, I think it was 305, if I'm not mistaken. So do the math. That's an average of three cups a guy for the players who are on that list. So that tells you there has been some importance placed on Stanley Cups. It's not certainly the number one thing or the only thing that was used to determine the list, but, you know, it does have some importance. The average was three. So a player like Dale who didn't have any, I wouldn't say that helped him when it came down to trying to weed out, the choices for those spots on a ballot. I think that's kind of what happened.
Tim, I want to go back to a team that you mentioned earlier when we were talking about the top 23 and under teams. You mentioned the Columbus Blue Jackets, and you've covered the Western Conference for many years here in Winnipeg, and, you know, you see six teams now within 4 points of each other, the Jets battling with teams like Calgary and St. Louis for that last playoff spot, and then you have teams like Columbus, Pittsburgh, and Washington, and what they're doing and the amount of wins they've racked up. Is this the year that we can finally say that the Eastern Conference is better than the Western Conference?
Well, it is this year, and I've been a big believer here, especially in the five full seasons that have taken place since the NHL teams returned to Winnipeg, that the West, you know, held sway when it came to the bigger sample and the better play. I think for quite some time the West, and in particular the Central Division, has been better than the East. But you have the star power of Alexander Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, that reside in the East, and the Capitals just to me seem to be a steady force and even getting better. And Pittsburgh again last year, once the coaching change took place, found its own level and was clear. Pittsburgh was clearly the best team from mid-season on, you know, right to the end of the Stanley Cup final last year. I mean, that to me was a team that just simply wasn't going to be denied the cup last year. And I'm not even sure if I was pulling for one team or the other in the final, because, you know, I have a lot of interest in what's been happening in San Jose over the years. Know some people that have been involved there, and have always been a big fan of Sidney Crosby. There's no other way to put it. I'm a reporter. That's, you know, kind of my career. But everything that Sidney Crosby does to me has been is something to marvel at. So there was a lot to sort of cheer for, I think, in the final last year. But clearly, Pittsburgh was a worthy cup winner. Is the East better this year? I think it's been proven wherever you turn, just about wherever you turn anyway. I love what the Minnesota Wild have been doing lately, and I think the playoffs are going to give us another answer as to whether the West has made some strides against the East. I think you can judge a lot in the playoffs as to who's better. We're certainly not there yet. Things are looking maybe a bit better for some of the Western contenders, including the Sharks again. But right now, I wouldn't want to be asked to make the argument that the West is still better.
Tim Campbell covers the NHL for NHL.com. Tim, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Have a great day, guys, and hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Likewise, Tim. Thanks for doing this.
Take care.
Let's go to break. When we come back, much more on your Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Shortly before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Tim Campbell from NHL.com for joining us. Still to come on the program, we're going to be joined by Marty Biron, of the TSN hockey analyst. Anthony Sanfilippo from 610 AM in Philadelphia, old friend of the show, is going to drop by. And Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche. He's going to join us in the final hour. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. That's our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Short segment here, guys, so we're going to flip around the show plan a little bit. Talk about the Islanders, and we meant to do this on Wednesday's show, ran out of time on Wednesday. The New York Islanders arena situation has been bad now going on close to 15 years. The Coliseum on Long Island, we'd been there, Ezzy, you know, a great old arena, but definitely outdated. So they moved to the Barclay Center in an arena that was not made for hockey, has obstructed views of the game. The ice is terrible because they do not have a modern and proper NHL ice system available in that arena. The piping is made out of plastic and not copper, I think is what the NHL needs it to be. And then you get to hear the news earlier this week that the Barclay Center...
By the way, I didn't realize Drew had a plumbing degree.
The Barclay Center, which the Islanders are a tenant in. In fact, the Barclay Center pays the Islanders about $55 million a year to host the team, and then they get all the revenue from concessions, from ticket sales, from, you know, all the ancillary of you know, things that go around a hockey team. The Barclay Center is booting the Islanders out of the arena, likely at the end of the 2018-19 season. So this New York Islanders team doesn't have an arena to go to. The Coliseum on Long Island has been remodeled but made much smaller. I suppose it could be retrofitted again to host a hockey team. But then you get the word out of Connecticut that the governor of the state of Connecticut and the mayor of Hartford have sent a letter to the owners of the New York Islanders indicating to them that they're welcome and they have open arms for them to return to Hartford. maybe the return of the whale since they left to go to Carolina. This Islander situation, is this a pretty serious situation for the NHL?
Yeah, it is, Drew. And you mentioned Barclays Center was not built for hockey. It was built for basketball and other events. And you mentioned it as well that, you know, the ice has been absolutely horrible in Brooklyn. You know, it's unfortunate because you mentioned we've been to the old arena, Nassau County Coliseum, mm-hmm. in Long Island, and Brooklyn is a great town. I mean, Brooklyn is... And what can't you say about Brooklyn? I mean, it's very famous as far as the culture.
Is this an episode of Girls now all of a sudden?
Just let me finish here, Drew. But, you know, you look at the new owners, Scott Malkin and John Ledecky.
Yeah.
You know, Charles Wang is now only a minority owner. I mean, I would assume, guys, that they want to build a new arena in New York. And you heard that there might be something being done at Citi Field where the Mets play.
The problem with that is they're going to need state money for it because they always need money.
Yep.
And you don't need a... fourth single team arena in and around New York City.
Yeah.
You have Madison Square Garden,
yep.
which I guess isn't a single team arena because the Knicks and the Rangers play there. You have the Barclays Center where the Brooklyn Nets play. You have out in New Jersey, the old Meadowlands, whatever. I forget the name of the arena right now off the top of my head.
Prudential
Center, thank you. And then
We
were also there, yes. You don't need a fourth arena.
Yep.
And that's the problem that Ledecky and Malkin are going to run into.
I don't think they want to play in Connecticut, all due respect to the people of Hartford, but I mean, the team is the New York Islanders. It's not the Connecticut Islanders.
And it's had a ton of history there as well. So you're right, but they really do seem to be between a rock and a hard place in that, you know, Charles Wang sort of, you know, threw a bit of a temper tantrum and went to the Barclays Center without really thinking through the ramifications of doing so. And now what you have is a situation where the team doesn't have a home, doesn't have an arena that's NHL quality, that's NHL suitable, and you have your unrestricted free agent, your superstar of your team, and John Tavares, who's going to be a UFA after next season.
Yep.
If you're John Tavares, you have to say, look, I don't know where this team's going to be playing. Why should I re-sign here?
Yeah, well, they have to figure this out, guys, in the next 6 to 12 months, because, as you mentioned, it looks like they won't be playing at the Barclays Center after the 2018-19 season.
Mm-hmm.
And you've already moved around from your old arena, so you have to find a permanent home here. So as you mentioned, there's going to be, you know, federal and state taxpayer money that's probably going to have to go towards a new arena if that's the way that they go. But certainly it's not the start that they envisioned when they moved over to Brooklyn 2 years ago.
Absolutely right. Let's head to break. When we return, we're going to discuss the upcoming NHL trade deadline, given where the Jets are in the standings. Given 3 games in a row that they've won, maybe 4 in a row if they succeed this afternoon, should the Jets be looking to buy or sell as we approach the NHL trade deadline? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
On the Curve, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Winnipeg Jets are treading water and likely won't be very active. Maybe their best course of action is to prepare for the upcoming expansion draft to get something for Matthew Perreault before losing him for nothing in June.
Hour number 2 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on
TSN. Good friend Frank Saravalli right there.
Good friend Frank Saravalli. A bit of an older clip that came out a few weeks ago as we sort of began to approach the trade deadline season, which, you know,
that was from 2012.
It's like Christmas. It seems to become earlier and earlier each and every year, or the Christmas shopping season, at least. That, I think, was, you know, just after New Year's, as apparently the trade deadline approach is now about 3 months long and constantly occurring. In any event, the Winnipeg Jets, here we are sitting on February the 4th, the trade deadline Wednesday, March the 1st, less than a month away. Complete coverage, of course, here on TSN 1290. In your opinion, guys, given what the Jets have in terms of rentals, namely Drew Stafford, I mean, I suppose Chris Thorburn could be considered a rental. I'm not sure how much of a market there is. Andre Pavlik, Paul Postma, Mark Stewart. Should the Jets, currently out of a playoff spot, be considered more of a seller or a buyer as we approach the NHL trade deadline?
Yeah, Drew, I don't think we know right now because you still have 28 games left. And as you mentioned, the Jets are 1 point behind the St. Louis Blues for that final wild card spot.
Mm-hmm.
And the St. Louis Blues do have 3 games in hand. But the point is that the Jets are still in it. And I think we're going to find out probably closer to that bye week. So probably a week before the trade deadline, we'll know. Are the Jets still in it or are they not in it? And then you could ask yourself the question, well, does that matter if the Jets are in it or not in it? Because you could say that the Jets might move Drew Stafford even if they're still in the playoff hunt, right, Dave, at the end of February? And that's because Drew Stafford's a pending UFA. As far as Matthew Perreault and the impact of the expansion draft,
sure,
we don't know if Matthew Perreault is on the protected list or not. He could be, he couldn't be. So,
obviously we won't know that till June because that's when the list comes out. But you're saying we don't know what the Jets plan to do.
Exactly. Sure. I mean, the Jets signed Matthew Perreault to a 4-year contract. Now, yes, he has had injury problems this year and in previous years, but they still did sign him to a 4-year contract. So I'm just saying, I mean, Matthew Perreault could be on that protected list, especially if the Jets decide to protect more forwards and go with option one, right?
Seven forwards, right. 3 defensemen, 1 goaltender, right, which ties back into the
right
health situation, yeah, of Tyler Myers.
And then you can protect Adam Lowry, you can protect Joel Armia and Mark Odano. If you only protect 4 forwards, mm-hmm, then you might be in a situation where you have to choose, you know, is it Adam Lowry or Matthew Perreault based on, you know, what you see as the future of the team. So, I mean, right now, Drew, I don't think you can say the Jets are buyers or sellers. We know that in years previous, the Jets have usually stood pat at the trade deadline. The only year that they were really aggressive around the trade deadline was 2015 when they went out and they acquired Jiří Tlusti and Lee Stempniak.
Right.
And I think Jay Harrison was in there as well a little bit before the trade deadline as
Jay
well.
Jay Harrison was in there much earlier because that's when the Jets' defense was riddled, right, with all those injuries. And they had to go out and they acquired Jay Harrison from, right, the Carolina Hurricanes.
So they were very active that year.
Yeah.
Right before they made the playoffs and got swept by Anaheim in the first round. But I wouldn't expect the Jets to move 3 or 4 players at the trade deadline, Dave. I mean, you look at the Jets, they put Alexander Burmistrov on waivers. He was claimed by Arizona. Are they going to move Drew Stafford and try to get something for him? It's possible. I would expect Drew Stafford probably to be at the top of that list, but as far as any other players after Drew Stafford, I don't think that the Jets are going to make very many moves, regardless if they're still in a playoff hunt, and you could call them maybe a buyer, you know, come March 1st.
Yeah, I don't know why this team would be a buyer, because generally if you're buying, you're thinking that you're going to be in contention for something. Like,
right,
if you're, you know, you have to be adding, if you're adding pieces, you think, okay, well, I'm contending for the Stanley Cup.
Sure.
Now the Jets, I don't necessarily think they're having a fire sale either. I mean, you know, there's no reason to, obviously, with the talent they have, especially young talent. So it comes down to veterans. And I think, as is right, like, to talk about it right now is kind of, you know, there's, I don't know that there's much point in the sense that we don't know. There's still so many questions. You know, there's obviously this question about the expansion. I mean, Tyler Myers, Drew, as you just touched on, is a big factor of that. And we learned from Coach Maurice, and he said the words, which was, you know, there's been no progress. I mean, that's significant, right?
Like, Dave, are we even going to see Tyler Myers play for the Jets again this year?
I honestly don't know. I really don't know. And so
it's hard to believe the Jets couldn't count on that, because there'd be no reason to have confidence in that occurring.
Right. So if you ignored the Tyler Myers situation, but although again, you can't ignore it in its entirety because you have to factor it into the expansion situation, sure, and how you're protecting and who you're protecting. So do I see the Jets being a buyer? Not in any significant manner, because I just don't think, remember the whole, and people are going to get frustrated, mad, because everybody wants to win now, because that's, we live in an instant gratification society. So it's hard to think that, you know, you have a long-term vision, but the reality is that's what this team is built for. It's not built for current success. And again, I know that you have veterans like Wheeler and Little and Byfuglien and Enstrom who are built to win now, not 5 years down the line. But I really think, like, if we were having this conversation next year, then you could phrase the Jets would be buyers. This year, I think this is a team that stands pat. At most, I think we see a small move, like a Drew Stafford trade. I think, especially the way things are trending, I think Perreault would remain on the protected list. Because, you know, generally you don't sign a player to that sort of 4-year extension to his contract, right? So it's essentially a 5-year deal, because he had the year left on his contract.
Right. It doesn't kick in until the start of next season.
Right. So you have a guy that you've signed to that length of time, and he's a guy who really likes the Winnipeg environment. I mean, we're not talking about a guy, you know, who was looking to go elsewhere. He's a guy who enjoys being here. He's embraced living in Winnipeg. So, again, you know, his health obviously does factor in. I mean, you can't just say, I like Winnipeg. You have to be a healthy, productive member of the team. We were starting to see that before the Corey Perry slash. We'll see if Matthew Perreault can kind of get back to the Matthew Perreault that everyone kind of expects him to be. Mm-hmm. And if he does, then maybe he factors in more. If he doesn't, then maybe you see Matthew Perreault's name traded.
Anybody who acquires Matthew Perreault, let's say, at the trade deadline, and I agree with you, I don't think he's going anywhere at the deadline. And I know he's high up on the TSN trade bait board, and he's the name that's bandied about. Anybody who's acquiring him, you're acquiring a four-year contract, as you mentioned, Dave, which means that you deem, and likely you're going to protect him if you acquire him, or you risk losing him, you know, again, you risk losing him to the Golden Knights if you don't protect him. But it's got to be a team that really places a high premium on a guy like Matthew Perreault, that they might protect him more than current guys they have on their roster. Hard to believe that this trade deadline is going to see anybody traded besides guys who are really pure rentals, given the expansion draft that hangs over everything that happens.
Yeah, and especially the Jets, Drew, because the Jets in their 5-plus years, this is their sixth year, have not been a team that's been very active at the trade deadline, either as a buyer or seller. We mentioned the 1 year where, you know, you had at least Stempniak and Jiří Tolusti come in.
They sold Andrew Ladd at the deadline last year, which was an obvious move that we all knew was going to
occur. And that was a month before the trade deadline as well.
It wasn't quite a month, but it was a few weeks before.
Sure.
But yeah.
Yeah, and so going back to what Dave said, I mean, if the Jets, for example, before that bye week, if they lose, you know, a couple games to the Ottawa Senators and Toronto Maple Leafs, maybe they lose three in a row. Even if they're out of the playoff picture and it looks like the Jets have a very slim chance of making it, I still don't see this team being a big seller. I agree with David. They're not going to be a big seller or buyer. You're going to see maybe one or two players moved. Drew Stafford is the obvious one, and we already talked about him. But you're not going to see the Jets, you know, move prospects or mortgage the future. You're going to see some minor moves made. If the Jets are going to go after a veteran goaltender or a veteran defenseman, they're going to do that around the draft or in the summer, Drew. Mm-hmm. That's where they're going to make their moves. They're in no rush to make any moves here. If they make the playoffs, I think that has satisfied their goal at the beginning of the season, because we know that I don't think anybody in the Jets organization was thinking this was going to be a Stanley Cup contender this year.
The only thing I could see the Jets, if they're getting, you know, if we're getting closer to the end of March, pardon me, the end of February, and things are breaking well for the Jets, they play well in this next 8-9 game stretch, and maybe some of the teams that have games in hand don't take advantage of them, I could see the Jets being in the market for a relatively inexpensive veteran defenseman. Because I'm not sure how much, with Tyler Myers' status definitely up in the air, I'm not sure how much longer this Paul Postma and Mark Stewart combination can hang on as your bottom pairing. And we don't know when Ben Sherratt's coming back. But these guys are playing, I mean, Sherratt and Stewart are playing tops for the most part, 10 minutes a game. And that's really putting a ton of pressure on the top four. So if the Jets are still sniffing around, if they're still, you know, within legitimate playoff hunt, right around the end of February, right around the beginning of March, I could see maybe a depth defenseman, not unlike a Jay Harrison going back a few years ago, that the Jets might be interested in acquiring.
Right, but again, we're talking about minor moves, right?
Very minor.
We're not going to see, you know, prospects like Jack Roslovic or Kyle Connor moved. We're not going to see, I don't think you're going to see Matthew Perreault move. That's just me. Mm-hmm. I realize that, you know, TSN has him on their trade bait board, but I don't think Matthew Perreault is going anywhere.
I'm talking fourth, fifth round draft pick in exchange for a guy who's definitely sort of a fringe 6'7", 5'6", 7 defenseman.
And guys, we don't even know if the Jets do expose Matthew Perreault. We don't even know that Vegas will take him. They might decide to take Marco Dano or someone else. I mean, it could be Sean Matthias. We don't know.
It's the big question mark that's hanging over absolutely everything as we enter into this trade deadline season. Before we go to break, as we mentioned throughout the show, it's been our 8th year anniversary. This is the 8th year that we have been on air, be it here or our previous home at Kick FM.
Ocho,
exactly. As we head to break, who can remember, who can forget this famous clip from July 13th, 2013? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Ezra and I, my mom went out for dinner last night, and Ezra informed us that he has a shower issue. And I'd like him to tell the listeners about the shower issue before we get into the Ilya Kovalchuk talk.
It's funny. I guess this is the second week in a row that people are being informed about my domestic issues. Last week it was the snoring. Rich, I knew Rich was going to bring this up. I told him not to bring this up. It's not a big deal, but basically my shower. I have one of those detachable showers. You know, that you move around. You know.
It's the detachable shower head.
So the shower head was disconnected from the hose. I don't know, because it kept dropping on, you know, it hitting the floor of the bathtub or whatever. And so I haven't had time to go to Home Depot or whatever and get a shower head. So for the last 2 or 3 weeks, I've just been using basically a hose. Basically, I've been showering with a hose.
Like a farm animal. And before New York. 3 weeks ago.
Well, I mean, I work. I have commitments at night. I haven't had time to go and get a new shower head. Basically, all that needs to be done, I get a new shower head, or it needs
picture
to be reconnected.
Picture hosing himself off in the morning.
Minutes past the top of the hour. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. The Jets and the Avalanche. That comes up this afternoon at 2 p.m., a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Also available on the TV side, TSN 3 with Dennis and Shane will have the call there.
The old boob tube, Drew.
Yeah, you would know the old boob tube, right, as... Anyways, this segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
By the way, Drew, when are we going to start eating that cake?
Well, you did bring a massive cake into the studio. There's four of us currently in the studio. Myself, yourself, Dave over there, producer Alex doing the great job. You brought a sheet cake that the person at Safeway, I believe, said could feed 25. Is that what I'm...
Of 24.
Yeah. A party. So this cake is for 24 people. There's four currently in the studio. We have had a grand total of zero pieces of that cake.
Well, we started the show off at 8 in the morning, so we're not going to eat cake at 8 in the morning, Drew.
Well, you've definitely... I mean, we're ending the show at 11 a.m. That's not what I would describe as really cake hour either, generally.
Well, I was thinking, you know, we could eat it around, you know, 10 o'clock or 10:15 when Marty Biron is on.
Are we going to teleport Marty some cake out in Buffalo where I think he is?
You know, you mentioned that I picked up this cake at Safeway yesterday after work. Uh-huh. And the funniest thing was the woman, I got her to write happy 8th anniversary Illegal Curve on the cake. And then she goes, you know, that cake is for 24 people, right? How many people are you serving? And I was like, there's about four people on the radio show. And she kind of looked at me like, what is wrong with you? How much do you actually eat? And, then I paid for the cake and left.
Story time with Ezzie Ginsberg. We'll be right back on TSN 1290. Let's talk about Jacob Trouba, the Winnipeg Jets defenseman who's been the subject of much praise as of late.
He's on fuego,
apparently. Are you Spanish in your spare time now?
Yeah,
I know. Are you Spanish now?
Yep.
Okay.
I like a good hamburguesa. It's hamburger in Spanish.
He spends a week in Mexico, and suddenly he's Ricky Ricardo.
Pedro Ginsburg over here. Jacob Trouba, we know the drama, let's say, that was surrounding him in the offseason at the beginning of the season, you know, after
holding
out.
The trouble with Trouba,
as we called it way back when. The trouble with Trouba now for the Winnipeg Jets is a good problem in that it might cost them way more money to re-sign him to his next contract, given the way he has performed thus far this season. You know, he had a great rookie year with those 29 points in 62 games as a rookie. Then there was a couple seasons in a row where there were concerns. The offense wasn't there as much. There was question marks about his decision making, question marks about his defense. Well, all those has certainly, you know, been put to bed as he now has, you know, equaled his point total from last season in just 38 games. Do you think, I guess, the sort of a two-part question. One, do you think Jacob Trouba and that trade demand is now in the past and is no longer a factor? And the Jets can get him under contract on July 1st on a long-term deal, because that's when they're eligible to negotiate with him. July 1st, 1 year prior to him becoming another free a free agent.
He'll similar to John Tavares in New York.
Sure, he'll be an RFA Trouba in this instance, not a UFA, of course.
Right.
So, you know, do the Jets, has he now done enough to earn that big paycheck that everyone expected he wanted after his entry-level deal?
Well, first and foremost, we have no idea if Jacob Trouba has rescinded his long-term trade request. I mean, we know that Kurt Overhart and Jacob Trouba demanded a trade, back in the spring, summer of 2016, and, you know, they signed the bridge contract. And, I mean, I don't know if Jacob Trouba wants to be here long-term. I think the only person that can answer that is Jacob Trouba. We're certainly not going to get an answer from Trouba's camp or the Winnipeg Jets. But you mentioned, Drew, he's got 21 points in 39 games. He's got, I believe, 11 points, Dave, in his last 15 games. I think Jacob Trouba's arguably playing the best hockey of his career right now. And to me, the stat that is the most impressive for Jacob Trouba is the 28 minutes, the 30 minutes he's playing a game. And that's exactly what Trouba wanted, Dave. Trouba wanted to play power play minutes. He wanted to play big time minutes. He didn't want to play 21 or 22 minutes a game. He wanted to be a top two defenseman for this Jets team. And right now, he is. I think he's the best defenseman for the Jets right now.
Yeah, I mean, he played 30 minutes in that last game. He played six more minutes than Tobias Enstrom. Tobias Enstrom, I would think it was around 24-something, and Trouba was up over 30. I mean, that's fairly significant when you're playing that much more than your defensive partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, fans who were like, we don't need Trouba, we don't need Trouba, are counting their blessings that, you know, the organization didn't lose Jacob Trouba, because you just can't replace a player of his potential and his caliber. And, you know, it was interesting because Mark Scheifele was being interviewed the other day, and he was asked, who's the player that on the team really doesn't get the credit that they deserve, or it's kind of like an unsung hero? And, you know, he went with Jacob Trouba. I mean, didn't even think about it. It was like Jacob Trouba. And so you know that the players around this organization recognize what he does for the team. And to his credit, he doesn't want to really talk about his own sort of success and you know, or appearance, well, no, actual success. And he was asked about it on the road trip and about the kind of getting past the trade demands and getting into the season form. And he's earned high praise from his coach, clearly from, you know, what the Maurice has allowed Trouba to do on the ice, but just for everything he's been able to do for this Jets team. I mean, he really is becoming that top pairing guy for Winnipeg, and that's what he wanted. And again, you know, a lot of people are like, well, if you're going to take Trouba or Myers, who are you taking? And it's like, well, you've got Jacob Trouba, who's, you know, your first round pick. And again, I'm not slighting Myers. I think if Myers is organization, nobody's complaining, because that's just adding defensive depth, which the Jets obviously need.
Sure.
But I just think, like, Jacob Trouba is one of those rock defensemen, offensively and defensively, that you build your organization, you build success in an organization on, and you don't just willy-nilly say, okay, well, you know what, we're going to have to part ways with that.
And Dave, I would have absolutely no problem if Kevin Cheveldayoff signed Jacob Trouba to a six-year contract extension in the summer, seven-year contract extension. I just don't know the answer to the question, does he want to be here long-term?
And I think that's the big question mark. I mean, you know, once you make a trade demand, you can't put that back into the bottle, you know, 100%. It's out there, and you can say all the right things about rescinding it and that your long-term plan is to be with this team. And he has, to his credit. But, you know, once it's made, you can't completely erase it from the record. So that's until or unless he signs that big long-term deal. Only then can Jets fans take solace and take comfort. And yes, he actually means what he says, that he wants to be an anchor defenseman on this Jets team. Because you're absolutely right. From my perspective, he's the best Jets defenseman on the team right now. And I mean, he played 30 minutes and 16 seconds on Thursday night against the Dallas Stars. And he didn't play, you know, a ton of minutes on the power play. He played a minute. He played 59 seconds on the power play and 55 seconds shorthanded. So to play 28 minutes and 22 seconds of even strength time.
Yeah, and the Jets only had two power plays.
I know. They had very few. So he's playing almost, you know, he's playing over 28 minutes of even strength hockey, which is obviously the hardest hockey you're going to be playing.
Yep.
That's Doughty-esque in terms of, and Ryan Suter-esque in terms of your time on the ice and the impact you're having. Now, I'm not saying he's Drew Doughty or Ryan Suter, but you know, the horses, the biggest horses in the NHL, play 28 minutes of even strength hockey.
But Trouba's playing like a top pairing defenseman. And Dave mentioned it. He's getting the job done defensively, standing up guys at the blue line. We saw that against Vladimir Tarasenko. I mean, you forget, Trouba's a big boy. I mean, Trouba is 6'2", 210-plus pounds. He's a guy that's physically intimidating, and he can back it up. One of the best skaters on the team, we know that. He gets into the play, jumps up into the rush, has a great shot from the point. I mean, this is a dynamic player. There was a reason why he was, you know, drafted where he was in the first round in 2012, right? And that's why we saw that promise when he scored 30 points in his rookie season. So I think Jacob Trouba, you know, he missed the first 13 games, Dave, and he was pretty rusty in those first, you know, 5 to 10 games. But, you know, in the last 15 or 20 games, he's probably been the Jets' best defenseman. And I'd throw in Josh Morrissey in there as well. The two young guns on defense are getting the job done.
And again, what it comes down to me is age. And he's a young defenseman who could be your stud for the next 6, 7, 8 years, whatever it is. And you've got Tobias Enstrom at 32, Dustin Byfuglien at 31. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that they're not still serviceable, and I'm not saying that they're still not going to be able to get the job done. But the fact is, you need a player like Trouba in the organization. And again, I realize that, you know, the Jets are looking for something very specific if they were potentially thinking about a trade for Jacob Trouba. But at the same time, you know, a lot of this is predicated on the idea of a healthy Tyler Myers.
Sure.
And if you don't have a healthy Tyler Myers, how can you afford to lose Jacob Trouba?
You can't. And it's amazing that, you know, if not for Myers' injury, we may not, you know, Jacob Trouba might still be playing in that, you know, that third pairing right side role that, you know, he so badly didn't want to be a part. And, you know, you can, you know, for Trouba, obviously he doesn't want his teammate to be injured. But he's certainly taken advantage, full advantage, and demonstrated to the Jets management that I am a top pairing defenseman. I am your future on the back end, and I do deserve the minutes that I, you know, that I've been playing, because I've been playing them pretty well as of late. Obviously, keep more of an eye on how this plays out over the coming weeks, months, and for Jets fans, hopefully years. When we come back, Anthony Sanfilippo of 610 AM in Philadelphia joins us, our good friend. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.